So just to start, if we could, I made a bet with my business manager about the audience, and so I taped $200 bills under the chairs of two seats in here. So if you could quickly check and see if you have that. Just go ahead and check. Take a look. Get up. You have to get up. You can't. You won't see it if you don't get up. Stand. There you go. That's it. Okay, great. You've all been successfully fished for the first time today. So there's a human nature part to this. And Mike said the crowd was tough. I said, well, I have to do a little better, then I'll get that going. So my role as the CISO of Microsoft, I'm just here, simple job, enable the company to build the most secure services and products that it can and protect the intellectual property and the assets of the company. So it's no different than any other CISO role in any other company. I don't sell product. I'm not responsible for feature, but I'm responsible for implementing. I was asked if I'd come share with you how we think about protecting one of the most attacked companies in the world and how we think about it and, frankly, how I sleep at night. That's the question I always get. How do you sleep at night with this job? Satya always tells me I have the best job in the world. I think I have one of the toughest jobs in the world. The answer is really simple. I took the job 5.5 years ago. The sleeping at night, I sleep like a baby. I wake up crying every night, at least 3 times a night, on the stuff that's going on because of the stuff that Mike sees happening. But when we look at it in this context, and you've seen this discussion around the three core bets and pillars we're making around reinventing productivity, building the intelligent platform, and creating personal computing, the one thing that's in the center of this that will either accelerate or slow that down is the issue around the security and privacy issues that are going on globally and locally. And so my responsibility is, I feel I'll have a large role to play in whether that is effective or not for you and for this company as we go forward. And there's really four key things that you're all familiar with, which is there will be people, process, technology, but more importantly, in the last couple of years, and in particular last year, policy is becoming a bigger and bigger issue, both as a deterrent, as a sense of nationalism gets stronger in boundaries for sovereignty of data and privacy, it's gonna become a much bigger play. The social engineering attempt at the beginning was not to make people feel like they weren't that phishing was a bad thing, but that it's critical no matter what technology or processes we put in place, we still have to count on that control point as people. And so today, I'm just here to talk about the process and technology we use and how we think about this problem, to share with you how you might be able to use that to better protect your environments. I won't talk about the people, but I think that's fairly obvious. I will say, in looking at the numbers on how many people you have in your security orgs, we're having an exceedingly difficult time hiring staff for security. It's a very less than 0.5% unemployment rate in that space, and I think that's only going to continue to grow. The policy component, which I think is super important, is the perfect discussion for Brad. And Brad will follow me, who's president of Microsoft, and we'll talk about policy, not just how we think and interpret policy, but how you influence policy, because that will become very important in how we think about suppliers, what nations we can operate in, how effectively we can operate, and how we'll work in a global platform. So I will focus again on these first two. The security landscape. Mike did a very sufficient job of scaring people on the situation. Every breach you've read about in the paper, me and my team have been personally involved with in helping in that scenario. I'm not throwing anyone under the bus. I'm not throwing rocks in a glass house. But there's learning to be had from this. And so when we think about it, we're seeing an immense amount of attention around this. And there's really three things to think about. What's changed in the last few years is the scale of the compromise. It's huge. And we're seeing really, really big impact, not just in terms of to the business, but we're also seeing really big impact. In terms of what's happening around the awareness and down the supply chain as part of that. The other part is, why do we see more breaches? Going back to policy. The laws that are being put in place that require disclosure on breach, which is not a bad thing, is also causing it up. So the question is there really more breaches, is there just more disclosure of breaches? I believe the answer that you'll find is both. And then the other thing that's causing it to be so much different now is just the motivation of the actors. And to the comment that Mike made, this wonderful movie, The Interview, and I didn't see the response. I've not seen it. I will not see it. I refuse to see it. I'm nothing against the movie. I just know that on December 20th on Sunday, I got the call about what we're going to do. Brad will talk to you about the position we took on it. And so for you, I'm not the most intellectually gifted person in the world. I love to watch National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation with my family every year. And I get instead of to watch The Interview. I never watched it. But we, of course, decided to deploy it on Xbox. And my team didn't sleep for the next month while we made sure we were protected from the actions that we took, which were the right actions. And I'll let Brett speak to that. But that political motivation has changed the scenario. And the only other thing that, the thing that's interesting, though, is in all the cases that we're looking at that happen, the actor methods aren't new. They're still fundamentally the same methods that have been going on for years. So there's a little bit of hope in the fact that they're not new. The only thing that's slightly new and not really new, and particularly in the Sony situation, was the concept of putting in destructive malware, which was don't just go in and do something bad and try to get out, but go in and do something super smart that does a lot of damage down the road and also doesn't let you recover. So in the protect, detect, and respond scenario, one of the most important things we spend time on here, business continuity and disaster recovery reports to me in the company, which is how do we build resilience into our system and response capabilities so that you assume you have a breach, and therefore you continue to work on the fact which how will I make sure I'm resilient, can compartmentalize, isolate, respond, both from an external presence and press perspective, and systems come back up or are mitigated when something should happen. It's a different mindset. It's a good mindset to have, but that's really the only difference that's happened in that scenario. So if we look at this, there's a fairly common approach that happens. You have the delivery, which was, as was commented before, phishing is a very, very common method for delivery. You have exploitation, get something into the system so that you can then get command and control of some part of the environment, almost always followed by an escalation of privilege. Michael mentioned the super user. We have to get rid of super users, period. Right? And then take actions on the objective that you have, whichever that scenario is. Now, the pictures down below aren't representative of each one. There's a blended threat. And so I'm taking a little bit of a different approach because as normally I don't think of technology as the answer, but there's been step rate function improvements and technology solutions that will help us in these scenarios. And so this idea of delivery, exploitation, command and control, and action is a subset of what's known in the industry as a kill chain. But this happens in every single breach, no matter which breach you're talking about. So I'm going to walk you through a scenario of how that plays out and how that's changing going into the future and today, actually, which is kind of nice. But also, there's two things to think about. There's the hygiene and the basics, and then there's the advanced threats. And they have to be thought about differently. And so, as Mike pointed out, and as I mentioned here, the methods aren't new. Last year, 99% of the common vulnerabilities and exploits were all over a year old. A year old. Meaning if any of your systems were up to date less than a year, 99% of those wouldn't have affected you or impacted you in any way, shape, or form. That doesn't mean you don't have to worry about the other 1%. That still means there's 7 million things that could possibly happen. But you got to get the basics right. We have to get the basics right. You can't be spending all your time putting all these amazing fences on your front door when your windows and your back door are still open. That's fundamentally not possible. And so I'm just sharing with you how we think about it and how we do it here. And so one of the things that's been effective in the last few years for us is, again, 90% of the breaches are preventable from just good hygiene. And it's not the expensive hygiene. This isn't the advanced threat stuff. This is patch. This is OS. This is antivirus. You need to do more than just signatures. It's a good identity management system, and it's good monitoring. And identity and monitoring are a little bit more expensive than patch, OS, and AV, but still not the really expensive stuff. If I look at my budget, this is the smallest percentage of that budget that I spend. Now, the interesting part for me, the smallest part of the budget I spend for software and hardware. It's very people intensive, so there's a lot of operational expense for me in these. And so for the systems that we have today, we're currently at about 30% of our line of business applications have been moved to the cloud. By the end of FY17, we'll be at 80%. And what that does for me is it takes the patch, OS, and AV off of my local plate and moves it into the cloud provider. So that operational cost is gone for me. Now, in case, I know there's mixed roles in the CXO event, in case anyone's confused, just in case my boss is listening, my intention is not to return those resources back to a cost pool. I still need resources, so I just want to make sure I'm not confusing anything here. And there's a good reason for you, not just for me, why I'm doing that. The second thing is moving identity to the cloud as well. So that'll be the next shift that will move as quickly as possible with Azure Active Directory. Not because of the operational piece and the security benefits I get, not just for Microsoft, but for all the other SaaS providers I do, and I'll talk to that in a moment. And then, of course, monitoring. But monitoring is not there yet, and we're working on how that can happen and with other providers to do that. But what that allows me to do is take those resources that were doing hygiene and redeploy them on the tails of the hard to solve problems. And I think that's a thing that a lot of people miss in some of this cloud component, which is that's one really good way for me to move that high operational cost components into another environment where frankly they're better at it than we were locally. So that's a big part of the strategy for us. But that's a really good security operational practice to do, whether you do it on-prem or you do it in your cloud provider. I happen to think that cloud provider is a good model, and that's why you'll see us continue to rapidly move our application stack that way. But let's walk through this blended threat. I want to try it, and you can give me feedback on this. So remember what I talked about. The threat actor has to have a delivery method. Phishing is by far the most predominant way people are initially trying to get in. They're very good. With all the social media and everything else, it's really easy to make very, very hard to detect messages. Now, the good thing is we have technology in place now that detonates all mail attachments that come through our O365 system, and we're able to pick most of those up pretty quickly, but they still can be effective and can still get through. So there's delivery, then there's exploitation. The employee opens the infected email on the workstation and tries to deliver payload, or employee opens infected mail using a mobile device and payload shows up there. Because with the proliferation of all the consumer devices, that's a very plausible scenario. By the way, this is a real scenario. And then, what do you want to do when you get there? You want to get command and control. You want to get the credentials for the device. If you really want to be scared, look at a Mimikatz demo someday and see how easy it is to do this. So you want to get that ability to get credentials. From the credentials, then you go for escalation of privilege. And when you get to escalation of privilege, you start moving across the network, and you look for, with those compromised credentials, you then look on how to take action on the data. And that could be, in the case of some entities, you kill the backups and then bring the system down so they can't recover from it. That's the malicious capability that happened in four scenarios that we know of that are public: Sony, Saudi Aramco, and one of the German steel mills, where there's actually destructive payload in that scenario. And then, or it could just be leaking data, financial data, intellectual property, whatever other component. So that's sort of the scary idea of the view. That being said, this is where I think there's hope in all of this, though. So let's take that same scenario and walk through, and this is an actual real-world case. I will protect the names for the innocent on this one. When the phishing attack happened in this case, three things were actually interesting. We detected in this phishing attack that they were going after 10,000 different customers. So what's Microsoft's responsibility in that? That's interesting. We have to work with law enforcement. Who do we tell? Do I notify the customers? So we, of course, notify on a website, here's a known attack, here's the indications of compromise, and here are mitigations you can do, both in your routing infrastructure, your firewalls, if you're using Exchange messaging systems. And it's basically put it up and hope people will read it. But of those 10,000 customers, you'd think you'd use some of the data we have to be smarter about it. Turns out a number of those customers have contracts with Microsoft in support agreements. So for those people, we called them and we said, hey, here's a situation. We think you're being targeted. Are you aware of it? Now, I don't know who takes your support call from Microsoft. It's probably not the security person. So it's got to be vetted. It's got to be routed. Then you got to go find the routing group to change it if it's a routing thing that needs to be changed. Your proxy and firewalls to know if it's known bad URLs to shut those down and then make changes in some rules in Exchange and move those out of the mailbox. But the good thing is you're proactively contacted if you were being targeted in this particular attack I'm discussing, and you can take action. But the really good thing was of that 10,000 customers, a number of them were O365 customers. And so again, my team finding this and working with the O365 team, in that case, we just immediately removed all that from the mailbox and you never knew it happened. And so it's just instant. It's not a couple days or a days for you to find it or to hope you see it. It just instantly happens. So here's a very good scenario where we can use that capability to protect people writ large in those environments with immediate action as opposed to education and action. Let's assume, though, just for fun, that you were in that case and you got bypassed all that system, which is possible. So in a defense in depth program, you say, okay, where is the next part in the kill chain? Well, there's the exploitation. It's on your machine. But the wonderful thing in Windows 10, which is where I'm saying we've had these step rate functions in security, and Mike alluded to it, and I'm not trying to pitch you on Windows. A lot of these things work for multiple platforms, but I just want you to understand the things that we're doing and how we're going to work with that from a process and technology perspective. Device Guard prevents a malware from running because now, if you're running with Device Guard, if it's no signature, it won't run. And I'm the one signing it, or you're approving who the signatures are. So even if it gets there, it can't do anything. That's a big deal. That's a huge deal. First, get rid of the phishing and those examples. Now, the interesting part is, and we'll come back, because you guys are saying, well, what happened to that mobile device? We'll get back to the mobile device. So now, what about the password hash? Does everyone know what pass the hash is? Who does? Show of hands if you know what pass the hash is. Who doesn't? It's okay. And who doesn't want to answer the question? Exactly. That's a good answer. That's a good, honest person in the room. I like it. You should know what pass the hash is. This is the predominant way. It has been an industry problem for 25 years where you don't actually have to have the password. You just have to have the credential and the hash, and you can pass the hash and mimic and do man in the middle and a whole bunch of other things, which gets you close enough to where you can go do escalation of privileges. It is a hard, hard problem to solve. It is not any particular OS. And now we find, this is my, that I don't believe in silver bullets. This is the thing I'm most excited about, which is in the virtual secure modules now, we prevent the accessing of stored credentials. So Mimikatz doesn't work anymore in Windows 10 with the system on a chip. There is a hardware piece. You won't be able to do this with AMD. I'm just telling you the honest piece about it. So the good part is we virtualize that security module and the credentials are no longer cached. So you've eliminated the ability to do pass the hash with this technology. That's actually a great, great piece of work to go get done. And it has been our Achilles heel in the industry. I've thought 10 years ago we did working groups on how to go solve it, and now we finally figured out how with this virtualization and new hardware capability to go stop pass the hash. That's a big deal. Now, what about, again, I don't have that capability in the mobile device, but the good part is I have conditional access from our Intune services. So if you're using the Intune services, and it's not just for Microsoft, I can now detect in the system, is the machine managed, and is the machine healthy? Meaning, is it signatures up to date for anti-malware, et cetera, et cetera. And if you're using Droid, you can use Lookout or Sophos or a bunch of other products. And so again, if it turns out that I don't think your device is healthy, I can just deny you access back into the system and you can't get access to mail. In the future, we'll be able to say you can get mail but no attachments and be able to do that dynamically on the fly. Also, more interestingly for me, is with the Intune services and Active Directory, you'll see in a moment, there'd be one other thing I would want to be able to go do. I bypassed all that. I wished I hadn't, but let's just pretend a defense in depth I had. I can dynamically decide I want to use strong auth. Now I have to be really careful. How many people use strong auth, two-factor auth today, multi-factor authentication? How many of you like it? Yeah, I know, it's tough. So, let's do something better with that. First though, let's provide it, so let's make sure it's there so that people can't use username, password, and we get rid of passwords and we use a strong authentication. And again, I can do that for all of our services, we're implementing that today, but I can also use it if I'm using Azure Active Directory for Dropbox, for Salesforce, and for other components, which will say you have to actually use two-factor auth to go through that, and we'll actually proxy that over for you. Now the point being here is, again, it's defense in depth. And we have to be able to go do that, and it can't just be on our stuff. And so you'll see here that the interesting part of all this is not just the individual pieces, but how these pieces talk to each other. So we have a security operations center that can talk to the Office 365 system, that can talk to the cloud and enterprise services systems, and they all feed each other. We touch a billion machines a month just on updating. So we have this wonderful set of data from our client network, and we have a massive amount of network data and operational data from our cloud services, both O365 and Azure. And so our signal-to-noise ratio, which is the fundamental problem of finding anomaly, is getting the right signal-to-noise ratio with machine learning applied, is a unique capability that allows us to actually operationalize this through a process that is so encumbering. So if, as I said, imagine two-factor auth dynamic in this scenario. Now, that being said, again, I don't believe in silver bullets, but there's two things I've always wanted to do. Stop pass the hash and get rid of passwords. In 18 months, I will no longer have passwords if I have my way. So there's a discussion that'll happen after that, but we're very close. And the reason why we're close, and you've heard about it, and I didn't put it up here, is this Hello biometric stuff that we're doing today, which is fingerprint, facial recognition, and iris recognition. And just to be clear, iris is the most secure with the most points of freedom on it, then fingerprint, then facial. right? But the interesting thing is, most people don't like two-factor auth because of the clunkiness of it. So for me today, I just walk up to my PC and I multi-factor auth in. More interestingly is, don't confuse authentication with prompting, right? So just to be clear, the user experience is, now I can have applications that they can say, is Brett really still there? Without having me to go enter credentials, or it can keep checking to make sure that I didn't walk away and someone's taken over my machine and is running something remotely. Because it will say, is Brett there? It will check. I might have to press my finger on it. I won't swipe. I can do both, but we have touch sensors that you'll get. In fact, you'll get those today with your Surface 4. You have a fingerprint sensor on your Surface 4. Do they give you those? Do you have them now?
Not yet.
So you have threes here and they're giving you fours?
They're holding us hostage.
Ah, nice job. I hope it has the sensor on. I better go check. If I'm wrong, I'll commit to figure out how to get you those. But instead of swipe, which is a pain, it's just touch. And so, and it's oh gosh, I'm going to get in some compute prior. It is significantly better than any other touch sensor you may have in your pocket. That would be on a phone, fruit-based phone, which I can bypass in 8 seconds. It's a really good experience. So that's a good experience. But imagine, again, using the facial and the camera stuff I use, which is the app. Let's say I'm doing something important like financial close. And it's going, are you really there? Are you really there? Are you? So even in this whole scenario, if someone's trying to do something remotely, if it doesn't sense that I'm there and that you can't be done in this nighttime service account module. So that's great. The sensors you have today are front-ending passwords. I don't want to lie, that's what they do. They make it easier, they give you multi-factor auth, but there's still a password hash underneath it, which is protected here. In less than 6 months, you'll see what next-gen credentials do for us, and we eliminate the password. There's no more password. So now, I'll still do the pass the hash components, because we'll still need that, but the reality is, the ideal scenario is no passwords in 18 months. And not just for your inside your enterprise, it'll be easy enough and pervasive enough that if I'm a banking institution and I have customers coming to me and consumer-based customers, we can use that same level of attestation and model and provide a variable-based experience based on the level of assurance we think you provide in that scenario. And that's the work that we do today. And that's why I feel like we're in pretty good, I feel like we're really on the press. So the question was, are we getting ahead? And I have always felt like I'm on the, I'll age myself here, this is a squirrel moment. Back to the Future, it was the day they flew to and Back to the Future. Did anyone see that or see that in the news? And then how many felt, wow, I'm really old. I remember seeing that show going, wow. So I'll go even further back, the Jetsons. I feel like the dog on the treadmill, right? Just never getting ahead on this whole thing. I actually feel like while we've made unbelievable progress, this year is the year we've made the most. And it's not just because of the technology, it's the processes and the ability of using all the telemetry and data we have to integrate, find anomalous capabilities, but more importantly, be able to take action, whether at a client level or at a cloud level, which we couldn't have done before. And so the example I use, I'll come back to say, the example I use in that, I'll go here. And so we live by a simple model, which is we have to honor the past of all the things that have happened, because they give us unbelievable learnings, which is why I was explaining the threat acting models are not new. The most of them aren't. So let's make sure we're still doing the right thing from the past. And be honest about the present. The methodologies, the financial models that are being used for underground are significantly better. So when I do our report out to the board, we keep getting better, but so does the adversary. So the risk is still obviously very high. But let's be honest about what things are we really going to focus on, the hygiene or some of the new capabilities, and we have to do both. How can you do it in an economically and fiscally responsible to your shareholders way? And I think that this blend between what we move to well commoditized services and what we do as special intellectual capital will be key. And so that's why I have that Gaussian curve you see me do. I know I still have a ton of work to do. I've got to get pervasive two-factor auth in our company. And I've got to get rid of passwords. Those are huge for me. And then I have to be hopeful for the future, because the stuff I'm showing you here is available now. And there's things that are coming that will continue on this treadmill of, again, taking advantage of data, cloud intelligence, and making the user more productive, not less productive. And so I actually have never been so hopeful. I've never been more proud to work for Microsoft than I am now. My biggest concern, other than sleeping like a baby at night, is apathy. Right, people who are just like, they're not worrying, they're not working on it, they're not taking care of it. And we're fortunate enough that our CEO meets with us every month to go over what the latest threat was, and we do a complete breakdown on the threat, and what do we learn from it, what thing changes do we make, and then how are we gonna go action those changes. Sometimes they're outside, sometimes they're inside. We do it every month. And our board has the same level of investment. And the other reason why I'm excited about the future is my biggest concern is the regulatory concerns in this nationalization of data. And Brad and his team are doing an amazing job on policy, and I feel like they're doing more, not just for Microsoft, but for the ecosystem, for the partners I have to go work with our supply chain that make it unbelievably possible. And so why I asked the question at the beginning, and I'll ask a question by show of hands, how many of you have enough security people to do what you need to do? How many of you want more security people? Okay, so I had 30 companies here for 2 days, their security officers. My team was presenting best practices, not just with Microsoft technology, but other technology that we use. And then I forgot that this, you'd think I'd be smarter than this, wouldn't you? I see it every time. So my threat intelligence person, who's so bright, is just smart as all get out, and he's from Virginia. And of course, I'm watching all these LinkedIn requests starting to come from these CISOs in the audience, and they're gonna poach my people. You can't do that. I get it. It goes back to the people thing. It's like, okay, from now on, you all have new names. We're gonna get Bob and Alice, the usual thing. So, but the people thing is really tough. And so I remember when I say I'm excited is the company is so deeply embedded in this, more so in the last 2 to 3 years under the new leadership, that it's just an amazing time. And with the right resourcing, and when I say that, I wanna make sure I'm careful. I still need 30% more resources than I have, in case anyone's wondering. But there's a reason why. 6 years ago when I took this job, a friend of mine was lamenting that his security team for his mid-sized company was too small and he couldn't do the things we were doing. And I remember thinking, I can do things to make sure the products we ship that you use are better and make sure all those bot things help you better. But now, it's actually really cool because my security team does work for him. The scenario I explained to you with Exchange and the other components, every day my team gets to work on things that directly impact and help protect you and the environment you're in, whether it's on the client or on the server. And I'm humbled by the opportunity to serve you, and so you should continue to use my team, continue to give me feedback on how we can better protect you. And I thank you for the opportunity. I'll be around after the break because I know there'll be questions. Thank you for your time.